Welcome to another episode of the Deborah Health Report, where we dive into current health and medical topics to keep the Delaware Valley informed and updated. The conversation continues with cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbisiero about arrhythmia diagnosis, treatment, and management. Here's Rasa Kay.
Hi, I'm Rasa Kay. We continue our discussion of heart rhythm disorders, or arrhythmias, with Deborah cardiac electrophysiologist Dr. Rafael Corbisiero. We talked about the current state of ablations to zap troublesome tissue in the heart with ever more precision, as well as some fascinating developments on the launch pad in the lab. But first, more about implantable devices such as pacemakers to protect against a potentially fatal arrhythmia occurring or recurring, and how that works.
So there are two strategies for implanting a defibrillator. One is a traditional, what's called a transvenous approach, where we enter the vein, usually the one that runs under the collarbone, and we implant the defibrillator wire into the ventricle. So it goes down the vein and into the heart. And
where's the entry point?
So we access the vein up in under the collarbone, the subclavian vein. So it's a minor surgical procedure. We make an incision. We enter the vein. The wire is placed through the vein down the heart and attached to the ventricle, and then connected to the defibrillator itself, which is placed underneath the skin and enclosed in the chest. So that has a wire that's in the vasculature. Those work very well. And they also have a backup pacemaker if needed. The other approach, depending on the patient, there is an approach to give you a defibrillator without entering the vasculature of the body. And that's called a subcutaneous defibrillator. That has a wire placed underneath the skin that goes up the chest. And then the wire comes around to the side of the chest where a device is implanted. And that basically works sort of like an external defibrillator, if you know how the pads are, if you watch TV, that will defibrillate from outside. So the amount of energy that's required is higher. But that has the advantage of nothing is inside the system, because with everything that you implant, there's a small risk of infection. If it's implanted within the vasculature, obviously that infection is more serious than if it's just underneath the skin.
Is this something where a patient would kind of pick and choose which one they prefer, or does the condition dictate?
I think the condition dictates. So in general, in a lot of our patients that might need backup pacemakers, might need special devices that might help the heart actually work better, which we can talk about, the doctor usually determine which type of device. For the subcutaneous ICD, there is no pacemaker to it. It is just a defibrillator. So the patient would have no other needs, and usually we reserve that for the younger patient.
What's it like to live with this kind of technology?
So for the most part, I tell patients, you know, this is a device that's meant to help. So they have it, and if it's needed, great. I tell them, it's like, you know, you wear your glasses to drive, right? It's a device that helps you. Put your glasses on, you can see, right? Same thing with the devices that we put in. It's there to help. So don't fight it.
but I mean, can you go swimming? Can you do sports? Can you, like, what are the limitations?
The only limitations are really post surgery. So if we implant a traditional device in the shoulder, we let that heal in for 6 to 8 weeks, and then the patient can usually go back and do whatever they want.
Are other treatments that are available, are there drugs that will keep your heart in the proper rhythm?
Yes. So in general, again, depends on where we're talking. So for the ventricle, for sudden cardiac death, defibrillators do a better job than medications. Hands down, no questions. For the top part of the heart, especially like with atrial fibrillation, there are drugs that work. However, there are probably better treatments for that rhythm than the rhythm drugs that we use. And that's the ablation procedure.
Moving on then to the other treatments and how they work, ablation.
So ablation is a term that means to try to get rid of a problem, to ablate. The most common ablation that's done in this country is that for atrial fibrillation. The recent studies that have come out probably show that ablation is probably better than the use of drugs. Anti-arrhythmic drugs can be effective, but they all have side effects and things that have to be watched. The worst of which is a drug called amiodarone, which is an excellent rhythm drug, but has side effects that we need to avoid.
What are the side effects of that?
Amiodarone carries serious side effects that might affect the liver, the lungs, the thyroid, plus many, many other minor side effects that can affect the eyes, the muscles, tremors.
This is like last resort stuff. This is a disclaimer that would take 3 minutes on a commercial, right?
It would. It would. It is around because it is the best rhythm drug that we have. And for the most part, most of us are trying to use it short term.
Right.
So, you know, until we can get the ablation done.
Lifestyle behaviors, what can that do for a rhythm problem?
There was a study several years ago, especially with atrial fibrillation, that showed that lifestyle is important. And it's really common sense. So if you have high blood pressure, make sure it's under control. If you have diabetes, make sure your sugar's under control. If you're overweight, lose weight. If you're not active, become active. All these things help. Because although we concentrate on our little areas that we work on, everything is interconnected. So the better shape that you're in, the better your rhythm problems.
Comorbidities that can affect a heart rhythm problem?
They're the typical ones that lead to heart disease, but typically, you know, high blood pressure, diabetes are the two biggest ones. You know, obesity, sleep apnea, you know, these sort of things.
Any recent advances or things that are in the works for treating arrhythmias?
The new modality that's out for ablation is called pulse field array, PFA, which is a different way of delivering the energy that's needed for ablation. In general, with ablations, the original ablations were done either what's called hot or cold. Cold would be the cryo ablation, which is done with a balloon and cold temperatures, as opposed to traditional ablations with a catheter, which delivers radio frequency energy, which we call the hot ablation.
What are the advantages of cold or hot, or the reasons you would use one or the other?
The cryo, to me, I've never really adopted that. It puts a balloon into the area where the AFib comes from and then freezes around it. They say that it's as good. I think it has limitations from an anatomical standpoint. I prefer the traditional catheter approach with radio frequency, which we've been doing. But the new PFA has promise of helping us complete the ablation faster, possibly safer. It has just come out, and so we're anxiously awaiting the release. I think in the future, what we're going to see is sort of a combination of ablation between PFA and RF. That's where I think the technology is going.
What about AI? What kind of role is that playing, whether in, you know, predictive analytics, diagnostics? Are you using it? Are you seeing it infiltrate your work?
I think that we all have a notion that that's going to become part of medicine. There's an excellent book out by Dr. Jag Singh from the Brigham that talks about using AI and analytical pathways he basically thinks we have to reinvent the health system in the sense that, you know, if you think about how guidelines are established, most of the research in this country has shortchanged certain groups, women, ethnic groups, socioeconomic groups. You know, it's hard to base all our medicine based on research from 70-year-old white males. So we really have to look into more. And I think Dr. Singh talks about how we really have to relook at the guidelines because the patient, the genetics, the other factors may give us different patients because not every treatment is good for every patient.
Are there new devices available for arrhythmia care besides the pulse frequency, but you know, in terms of the implantables, what do you see on the horizon?
In terms of arrhythmias, basically the ablation, those are the modalities that are out right now. PFA is the new kid on the block that I think is going to be incorporated. I still think we'll see traditional radio frequency and a combination thereof. There are other things that are not quite ready for mainstream that have been looked at that are quite interesting, especially as we move down to the ventricle, like innovative techniques where you can inject like certain iron-like filaments that are taken up by the the heart muscle itself and then embed it in the muscle. And then when you deliver the energy, you actually heat up the iron so that your ablation is more successful. That's not mainstream stuff, but that's been looked at. There's a group out in Washington University in St. Louis that actually can try to do an ablation without even entering the body, much the way we deliver radiation therapy for cancer patients. So they will map out the heart, okay, extensively, and then focus on the area that needs to be worked on. And the patient is, you know, lying still, you know, listening to music, and the ablation is directed from outside into the heart in a specific spot without ever entering the body. And they've done ablations that way. But I don't think any of this is quite up for mainstream work yet.
Yes, but you're looking very jazzed as you're talking about all of this.
Well, you know, that's really an innovative way to do things. It's akin to how they deliver cancer therapy, right? So it's a focused beam that goes right to where it has to go.
It's like microwaving it.
Right, right. It's just like the new, like new PFA delivers the energy, and it's a little bit safer because it only targets the area that you're hitting and doesn't affect anything else.
But you're still going in there.
Yes, that has to be delivered inside. So let's say there's a circuit in the heart that you want to get. Let's say they've done all types of ablations in St. Louis. So there's what's called a flutter circuit, and there's one little area that they have to hit. The beam hits that, and then, you know, we'll see if it's gone. Now, in order to test, you know, you still have to be invasive, but the ablation itself could be targeted.
So to test, meaning the ultimate test is not whether the heart rhythm is corrected. You still have to invasively go in and
to test to see whether or not the rhythm is gone, right? So whenever you do an ablation, you think you've affected the tissue. You still have to test it to make sure that you've achieved what you want to achieve.
Oh, you mean the test then isn't just that your Apple Watch is showing that you're looking, that,
no,
that things are good?
No. That's how you follow the patient, like clinically. But in order to be done with the procedure, you want to do the ablation, do the work, but then test to make sure that you think that the work is good.
Well, see, this is why we talk.
Right.
This is why I bug you. So this has been going around the internet. I found it on Facebook.
Uh-oh.
From a college professor friend of mine, and the comments were, "This is so good to know. Thanks so much for posting." And I thought I'd run it by you. So here it is. Say you're driving home from work, and all of a sudden, you have chest pains starting to radiate in the arm and jaw. It feels like being stabbed in the chest and heart. You're only a few miles away from the nearest hospital or home. Unfortunately, you don't know if you can make it. Maybe you've taken CPR training, but the person running the course hasn't told you how to help yourself. How do you survive a heart attack when you're alone when it happens? A person who's feeling weak and whose heart is beating hard has only about 10 seconds before losing consciousness. But you can help yourself by coughing repeatedly and very strongly. Deep breaths before every cough. Coughing should be repeated every second until you arrive at the hospital or until your heart starts to beat normally. Deep breathing gives oxygen to your lungs, and coughing movements boost the heart and blood circulation. Heart pressure also helps to restore a normal heartbeat. This is how cardiac arrest victims can make it to the hospital for the right treatment. Well?
Interesting.
It says, cardiologists say if someone gets this message and passes it on to 10 people, we can expect to save at least one life. What does this cardiologist have to say?
I think that would be rare. I don't argue with, I would try to do that, but I think you're better off with a 911 call and getting somebody to you immediately, because what works the best is what we know is early defibrillation if you're having true sudden cardiac death. There are other rhythm problems, like if it's an organized circuit, that a cough or a chest thump will actually break the rhythm problem. But if you're having ventricular fibrillation, you need to get a defibrillator, you know, to cardiovert you within 5 minutes.
So your first action in a scenario like this is call 911.
911.
And get them to nowhere. And then
right.
Cough your head off.
Yeah.
But 911 first.
911, because you need attention, right? So what works is early CPR, early defibrillation. You know, if you're truly going into sudden cardiac death. I mean, again, a cough, a chest thump may work, but I think that's rare.
That's Dr. Rafael Corbizierro, cardiac electrophysiologist at Deborah Heart and Lung Center. Join us for another deep dive into a health issue affecting you or someone you care about next month. As always, the podcast will be available on the first Wednesday. I'm Rasa Kay.
You can always listen to all of the informative Deborah Doctor interviews at DeboraHealthReport.com. Schedule an appointment at DemandDeborah.org.